Section 14 of The Testament of Beauty by Robert Bridges. This Legamus recording may be freely used and adapted as long as Legamus and the reader are credited. Book 4, Ethic, Part 2. If duty held as long, now, as in the old adage, pleasure may follow after, taking like second rank in Plato's myth, as I twist it, wherein we traced duty from the selfhood of individual life, growing to reach communion with life eternal, while in the younger horse was pleasure intensified by love, until it issueth in the love of God. And yet hath pleasure truly its main stronghold in self, because the greatest pleasure that man knoweth is aye the pleasure of life, even as his chief displeasure is death. This life-joy, like the breath-kiss of the all-ambient air, unnoticed till the lack of it bring pain and death, is coefficient with the untrammelled energy of native faculty and the autometric scale of all functions and motions, which in the animal struggle for self persistently against all hindrance. It is the lordly heraldry of the bannered flower, in brutes the vaunt of vigour and the pose of pride, their wild impersonation of majesty, and in man the grace and ease of health alike in body and mind, that right congruity of his parts, for lack whereof his sanity is disabled, maimed, and compromised. From personal pleasure, then, seeing how good it is, and how a good man's pleasures all are good, it came an easy thought for men in quest of happiness to take it for their aim in all conduct, the account and logic of ethic. So, flaunting their motto, pleasure for pleasure's sake, these doughty hedonists, having got rid of whatsoever old-fashioned king had ruled by right divine, chose out for his good looks and crowned this gay pretender, against whose privilege men in the street and schoolmen are for once agreed, because none will deny that some pleasures are bad, while all men honour them who, for their honour's sake, will suffer pain and risk the great displeasure of death. Pure hedonism, therefore, is confuted off-hand, and its social pretension is but a will-of-the-wisp, as if the honest pleasure of a wise man could lie in furthering or conniving at the pleasure of them who know not even their own unhappiness, nor how, ere they can win happiness, they must learn wisdom by paths difficult and to them unpleasurable. Nor is spiritual hedonism in better plight, for some are found to take spiritual pleasure in crime. 'Twould seem, then, the prime task of ethic to discern twixt pleasures good and bad. But first, 'twere well to show how ever it came that pleasure, being the champion of our integrity, should in the event appear virtue's insidious foe. For sure there is no knowledge in a wisdom of conduct cardinal as is this. Now, in my thought, the manner of it was on this wise. As pleasure came in man to the conscience of self, his reason abstracted it as an idea, and when he found the pleasure increasing with the conscience of it, he dwelt thereon, and seeking more and more to enrich his conscious pleasure, and bloating it with luxury, invented and indulged vices unknown to brutes. Thus was nature's intention thwarted, whereupon, seeing also how brooding upon sensual delight provoketh the desire, which so long as the mind be but engaged healthily, or distracted apart, would never rise to emotion, moralists took fright, and teachers banishing pleasure from ethic, where they should have been content with a danger signal, posted a prohibition, and not only forbade pleasure as a motive for any conduct, but ruled that any admixture of intention or its chance presence deprived conduct of merit. Whence pleasure with them, instead of being an in itself absolute good, as nature would have had it, and which men would wish to be always present, and with his perfection increase, came to be banned as a pollution of virtue. And so, when the young poet, my companion in study, and friend of my heart, refused a peach at my hands, He then, being a house-carl in Loyola's manny, 'twas that he feared the savour of it, and when he waved his scruple to my banter, 'twas to avoid offence. But I, upon that day, which after 50 years is near as yesterday, was no stranger to fear of pleasure, but had grown fearful of that fear. Yet since the sublimation of life, whereto the saints aspire, is a self-holocaust, their sheer asceticism is justified in them, the more because the bent and native colour of mind which leadeth them aloof, or driveth, is that very delicacy of sense, whereby a pinprick, or a momentary whiff, or hair-breadth motion, freeth the detent of force, that can distract them wholly from their high pursuit. Wherefore they fly God's garden, whose forbidden fruit, seemeth to them, was sweetened by a fiend's desire to make them fond and foolish. Nature, ne'ertheless, singeth loud in her prison, and for all ecstasy, these mystics find no language but to echo again the psalm of her captivity. Nay, furthermore, the doctrine esoteric, in their rapt divines and their diviner poets, this the novice knew, is the reincarnation of their renounced desire. Repudiation of pleasure is a reasoned folly of imperfection. There is no motive can rebate or decompose the intrinsic joy of active life, whereon all function whatsoever in man is based. Consider how this mortal sensibility hath a wide jurisdiction of range in all degrees, from mountainous gravity to imperceptible faintest tenuities. The imponderable fragrance of my window jasmine, that from her starry cup of red-stemmed ivory invadeth my being, as she floateth it forth, and wantoning unabashed asserteth her idea in the omnipotent blaze of the tormented sunball, checkering the grey wall with shadow tracery of her shapely fronds. This frail, unique spice of perfumery, in which she holdeth monopoly by royal license of nature, is but one of a thousand angelic species, original beauties that win conscience in man. A like marvel hangeth o'er the rosebed, and where the honeysuckle escapeth in serpentine sprays from its dark cloistered chamber through the old holly-bush, spreading its joy-bunches to finger at the sky in revel above rivalry. Legion is their name, lily of the vale, violet, verbena, mignonette, hyacinth, heliotrope, sweetbriar, pinks and peas, lilac and wallflower, or such white and purple blooms that sleep in the sun, and their heavy perfumes withhold to mingle their heart's incense with the wonder dreams, love-laden prayers and reveries that steal forth from earth under the dome of night. And though these blossomy breaths, that have presumed the title of their gay genitors, enter but singly into our neighbouring sense that hath no panorama, yet the mind's eye is not blind unto their multitudinous presences. I know that if odour were visible as colour is, I'd see the summer garden aureoled in rainbow clouds, with such warfare of hues as a painter might choose to show his sunset sky or a forest aflame, while o'er the countryside the wide clover pastures and the bean fields of June would wear a mantle, thick as when in late October, at the drooping of day, the dark grey mist arising blotteth out the land with ghostly shroud. Now these, and such like influences of tender specialty, must not, so fine they be, fall in neglect, and all their loveliness be lost, being to the soul deep springs of happiness, and full of loving kindness to the natural man, who is apt kindly to judge of good by comfortable effect. Thus all men ever have judged the wholesomeness of food from the comfort of body ensuing thereupon, whereby all animals retrieve their proper diet. But if, when in discomfort, 'tis for pleasant hope of health restored, we swallow nauseous medicines, so mystics use asceticism, yea, and no man readier than they to assert eventual happiness to justify their conduct. Whence it is not strange, for so scientific minds, in search of truth, digest assimilable hypotheses, they should extend their pragmatism, and from their happiness deduce the very existence and the nature of God, and take religious consolation for the ground of faith, as if the pleasure of life were the sign manual of nature when she set her hand to her covenant. But man, vain of his reason, and thinking more to assure its independence, will disclaim complicity with human emotion, and, regarding his mother, deemeth it dutiful and nobler in honesty coldly to criticise than purblindly to love. And in pride of this quarrel he hath been led, in the end, to make distinction of kind twixt pleasure and happiness, observing, truly enough, how one may have pleasure and yet miss happiness. But this warpeth the sense and common use of speech, since all tongues in the world call children and silly folk happy, and sometimes even brutes. The name of happiness is but a wider term for the unalloyed conditions of the pleasure of life, attendant on all function, and not to be denied to the soul, unless, forsooth, in our thought of nature, spiritual is by definition unnatural. But I would not thus wrong nature. Rather say I, that as man realizeth his higher energies, the quality and value of his pleasures will so change, that though the animal life-joy persists throughout, yet his transported joy developing thereon cometh by excellence to need a special term. And Aristotle, in his 10th book, thus summeth it. Whatso that faculty may be, which hath in man natural governance, and apprehendeth things noble and divine, it is the energy, so saith he, of that faculty in its proper excellence, which is the perfect happiness. And with his predicate he assumeth the less perfect also, and lower states. But these philosophers, their ethic being concerned with man's perfection, used the abstracted terms whereby they had predefined distinctions, which, as they diverged in separate culmination, obscured identity. 'Twas for that reason, I guess, that Aristotle himself so harpeth on his doctrine, as if he was aware that his conclusion had somehow missed its full premise. But if we see spiritual, mental, and animal to be gradations merged together in growth and mixed in their gradations, and that the animal pleasure runneth throughout all grades, heartening all energies, then Aristotle's wisdom goeth without saying, and the actual complexity of human conduct will appear nature's order in the condition of growth, and so the trouble and wonderment of balked insight may all be presently sponged from the treatises. Although in the distinction of pleasures good and bad, the unparagoned nobility of the great virtues standeth without controversy among them that know, who instil them as duties, yet they have writ no rule nor rubric whereby conduct can in lesser affairs accommodate these principles, when they conflict in upright personalities, nor square their use with the intricate contingencies that knit our lives, and the interaction of unrelated sequences. In that uncharted jungle a good man will go right, while an ill disposition will miss and go wrong. Yet in the worst we still may find something to praise, in the lame child that stumbleth, or the cankered bud. Even the poor blast of promise of desiderate fruit hath true relation to the absent beauty thereof. For ever on the ass's bridge, and in the ship of fools, life is agog, and there the muse hath set her stage, and in humorous compact with philosophy hideth her godlike face beneath a grinning mask, and donning the gay motley of idiotic man, impersonateth him in his chance dilemmas, by the eternal comedy of the unfitness of things, beguiling the disconsolate with sympathy, and cheering contemplation with aesthetic mirth. Full many have found happiness, toiling all their time, thus disporting with truth, and at carving such toys, have through love of children become teachers of men. But here, I will not hand to do of switch metere. End of section 14.